Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Steve Young. Steve is the co-founder of Immortal, a high-performance and longevity company. Steve's goal is to help a billion people end their suffering from chronic illness and turn their health from a liability into their greatest asset. During our conversation, he talks about how the current healthcare system is broken and it's harming people, why it's important to focus on the how of being healthy versus the what. He encourages everyone to gain a deeper understanding of their biology, mindset, biomechanics, energy, and environment, all combined, in order to live in peak performance in every category of life. He even shares actions to take today to minimize illness and start maximizing longevity. If you're feeling stuck when it comes to your health, you'll wish to listen in. Steve offers unconventional tips and techniques for increasing energy and vitality for feeling wealthy. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Steve Young. Steve, I'm so excited to be here with you today. Thank you for being on the Wealthy Wealthy podcast.
Great. I'm super excited for this.
So let's talk a little wealth and wealth. And so you're in the wealth category. And I just learned so much from you when we chatted. We met at the Wings conference. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to know him better. This man is amazing. And your work's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then just who you are as a human, amazing. So anyway, really looking forward to our conversation. So thanks again for being here.
Of course. Yeah.
All right. For everybody listening in, share a little bit about your story. Like, who are you? Who have you been? Who are you today? And a little bit of the life journey that brought you to your current work.
Yeah. So what I currently do, actually have a few businesses all in the sort of health and fitness niche. So I'm actually in my office right now in my brick and mortar clinic where we do on-site healing, right? People that come for physical therapy, even though we sort of apply sort of out-of-the-box approaches beyond just like stretching and strengthening for them. And in our other business called Immortal, we're essentially, I mean, the big mission is to end suffering from chronic illness, right? So from doing sort of health and fitness and healing for the last 20 plus years, what I figured out is there's a specific framework and a pattern in which we can use to figure out what's the root causes of people's symptoms, right? And so the key is reverting back to the ancient ways of healing where we're able to look at root causes, whereas modern healing, or really modern medicine, is mainly addressing symptoms and typically addressing symptoms with drugs. And so, yeah, so that's pretty much my playtime, how I got here. So go back. So 11 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with an incurable disease, and she was cured in 6 weeks. And that really opened my eyes as to it's ulcerative colitis. And that really opened my eyes to like, oh, my God, how is that possible? Like, in fact, it was easy, right? We just got the relevant data, found the root causes of the symptoms of ulcerative colitis. And then a friend that I met when I was in undergraduate school was spearheading the process of curing her. And that really put me on the path of like, well, if that was that easy, how come like the masses don't have access to this? And so I started, you know, down that journey. And then really previous to that, I've always been in really passionate about fitness, you know, and like most guys, you know, when I was 14, I started like working out, and every guy that's a teenager, if they don't admit it or not, is mainly to look better for chicks. That's how it started. And so from doing that and learning about health and fitness, I mean, really for the last 30 years, really being able to see, you know, 8,000 patients later, like what are the patterns that contribute to people's inability to heal? And so that's been my passion for like the last 30 years.
Excellent. So what were the root causes that you were able to locate and work on?
Yeah. You mean like specific in general or specific in like my wife's case?
In your wife's case.
Yeah. So what's interesting is her symptoms of ulcerative colitis started about 2 weeks after we got back. We had this amazing trip in Miami, ate lots of sushi and stuff. And so and she started having symptoms. And it was so bad, like she was hospitalized for a week. And I mean, you know, these days they don't keep you in a hospital for a week unless you're like dying. And so she couldn't hold down food. She was like fed through an IV. And so they said, oh, you have ulcerative colitis. You take these two drugs for the rest of your life. See you later. And so I decided to opt out of that reality. And when I reached out to my friend, so we basically did deeper testing. We tested higher level stool samples. And what we found was she basically had hemolytic E. coli, right? And so it's the same strain of E. coli. Once in a while you hear someone ate like a raw hamburger and died. That's a strain that can kill you. And so none of the doctors, and she works in a hospital system. We went to like the best doctors in this Pennsylvania area. And they basically didn't do enough testing to figure out what was actually causing the bleeding in her intestines. And so, we basically used natural stuff. We didn't even use antibiotics. And in fact, it was an extract of oregano oil that killed the bacteria. And then literally 6 weeks later, she was completely fine. No relapse, no maintenance drugs or maintenance programs. So when you treat the root cause of things, there's no need really for maintenance.
And how'd you know how to do this? How'd you know to say, you know, there's got to be a better way other than being on medication the rest of her life, and there's got to be something more going on, and maybe we should do the stool sample?
Yeah. At that point, I've learned enough about a human to know that our system is just not working. But back then, 11 years ago, I didn't know what the solution was, but I knew this can't be the way, right? And so that's when, interestingly, how the universe works. So when I was an undergraduate student at Penn State, I was able to somehow talk my way into taking a graduate level class. And if I didn't do that, I would have never met my friend who was in that class, who ended up being like the super scientist. And he was the one that I called, who knew exactly what test to get to basically find the root causes for her. It's very interesting. If I didn't do that class, I would have never met him. And so, yeah, I knew there was a problem with the system. I didn't know what the solution back then was. He knew. He's way ahead. And so I reached out to him and he knew exactly what tests to do. And that was the eye-opening moment in me, was like, I'm going to look into, wow, how is it that we're not able to do this for everyone? Yeah. And so fast forward 11 years later, we've kind of figured out some stuff.
All right. Well, you have me very curious. You know, it's almost like there are these three camps. There's this camp one that somebody's struggling with some type of chronic illness. And let's say they're in the system and I was there at some point. And then those of us that have been, that didn't, you know, that weren't married to someone like you, go to doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor, and then medication, 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 medication. And then somewhere down that line, realize it's getting worse and not better. So but anyway, it's like being in a state of some type of chronic illness, being in the system and being there. The second camp are those that maybe a lot of stress, lifestyles maybe a little out of control one way or another, and therefore just lack energy. They don't have the energy. They don't have the momentum. They just don't have the mojo that they used to have. So they're tired. Yeah. They're not sleeping, but no chronic illness, just not feeling themselves. And then there's the third camp of those that, you know, I feel pretty good and I think I could feel better. How do I optimize what I'm already doing? What else could I do with the technology today, with what's available today, with, you know, people like you that can help me, especially as I age, maybe think more about longevity because we're living longer. So if I live to 120, I want to be healthy to the day that I'm no longer, you know, the day is my day, and not just suffer those, you know, who wants to suffer the last 20 years?
Exactly.
So what do you say to each of these camps? Let's talk about, I know your real specialty is chronic illness. So tell us a little bit about the system and what you found with those in some type of illness situation. And then what, you know, typically you recommend is this framework that you mentioned.
Yeah. I love how you segmented the population, those three groups. It's amazing for sure. While the framework that we use applies to all three, the action steps, like the one thing that's the most important for each of those groups will be different for sure. Right. And so the framework that we use essentially is current medical systems look at your symptoms and they label it, right? So if you feel off and you go to a doctor, maybe the doctor will label you with, let's say, chronic fatigue. If you actually have a diagnosis, you might get like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you might get diabetes, right? They label you with a thing. But if you think about it, that's one way to look at it. The other way is, well, why isn't the system, which is innately designed, by system, I just mean human, right? And so, and the reason I use system is when I say human, that tends to pigeonhole the concept that it's just biological, right? We're way more than biological. We are a system, right? The environment affects us. We have our own electromagnetic field. This is all documented with science. So I use system going for, but really it means human. It's just a little bit more encompassing than human. And so the system is designed to adapt and heal, right? No matter what we tax and push and irritate the system with, if it can heal and adapt fast enough, it wouldn't have symptoms at all. And so we look at the other half of the picture. We actually ignore, in a way, the symptoms. If we can just double, triple, quadruple a human's speed and ability to adapt and heal, they wouldn't even have the symptoms, right? So one, we'll get sort of high-level framework is we're actually just really maximizing adaptation and healing. And if that's the intent, it's a whole different ballgame, right? Because the testing that one would do to identify the symptoms would be very different tests to do to identify what's blocking adaptation and healing, right? Very interesting, right? Very different tests, right? And so, for example, if someone wanted to see if you have high cholesterol, they would test your cholesterol, right? And the cholesterol is high, and it would say, oh, you have high cholesterol, so we can now give you a drug for the high cholesterol. Even though, you know, this is always a fascinating data to tell people. You can Google this. It's public information. 75% of the people who have a heart attack have low cholesterol. And yet doctors are still trying to get you to lower your cholesterol. Purely from a numbers game, they're putting you in a more likely to have a heart attack category. And the reason this is happening is because the test that they're doing to assess the symptoms, which is cholesterol, is actually not relevant. We've known for at least 12 years in science that it's actually inflammation, right, that leads to the stickiness of the cholesterol, and the stickiness is what clogs the arteries, not the volume of cholesterol. We've known this, right, for a long time. And so inflammation is on the other side, right? It's the main obstacle that blocks healing and adaptation. And so what we look at is, well, what are all the main variables that would cause systemic inflammation? Right. And again, if anyone Googles online, just type in systemic inflammation illness, you'll clearly see there's been tons of studies showing that systemic inflammation is the root cause of almost all illnesses. Every illness that any listener could name right now, the root cause is systemic inflammation. Right. And so, well, what are the things that block systemic inflammation? Well, our obviously, our biological factors, right? If you're missing certain vitamins and minerals, you're going to cause some systemic inflammation in your body. Your food choice, right? By now, our food supply in general is pretty contaminated, especially in America, right? And so there's like 76 pesticides that's banned in most countries that's completely allowed in America. So your food choice in terms of clean food, right? Organic, clean source food. And then underneath of that, even if it's organic, ideally you would want to get testing to see which foods actually unique to you cause inflammation, right? They're called food sensitivity testing, right? And so while some traditional doctors do not believe in this, we've seen tremendous value in getting this testing, and essentially it helps you figure out which foods heal you versus which foods harm you, right? A great example is when I was tested, broccoli, garlic, mushrooms, all amazing. Super healthy, not so amazing for me. They cause me inflammation, right? And so that's sort of food selection is the second category. Another category would be your body, right? So if your shoulders and chest muscles are really tight because you're kind of slouched forward working on the computer, that extra pressure on your spine in that compromised position, study shows, puts about anywhere between 40 to 80 pounds of extra pressure down your spine all day. And also, we know that there's studies showing if I simply just raise my arms and sort of, you know, puff up my chest, I'm actually changing my testosterone levels. And what we're finding is that, Exactly, immediately, right? 12% increase just now. And so our mechanical bodies directly tells our chemical self what's happening, right? And all these variables are all overlapping, right? So ideally, we want to make sure that we're restoring the mechanical system, also known as your muscles and your posture and all that stuff, to be as balanced and at ease as possible, right? And a fourth one is going to be your mind, right? So how we assign meaning to what's happening in our lives and our previous experiences essentially dictates this quote unquote stress. I do not believe in reducing stress. I don't believe in that reality, right? Or dealing with stress, because if you simply, because that's a symptom, right? The root cause is how are we assigning meaning? And so if we play in the assigned meaning reality, the stress goes, you know, there is no stress anyway, right? And so it's how we assign meaning to our experiences and previous experiences for sure. And the last would be environment, right? We can optimize everything. You know, we have your biological nutrients, amazing. You're eating healthy foods. You're, you know, taking multivitamins and you're exercising and you're stretching and you're not, you know, you're assigning meaning in ways where you have constant peace, but yet you live in a house with tons of mold. You live in a city with high smog, you're not going to be healthy, right? Because those dust particles and the mold is absolutely going to be taxing your system, right? And so those are the main categories, the main ways in which we look at the system. And what we're really doing is we're identifying what's blocking the body from healing, right? And the other way to say it is what's really producing that systemic inflammation that's happening, right? So very different than diagnosing you with diabetes, with high blood pressure and all that stuff.
So was the first one inflammation, or what was the first one?
Yeah. So the first one is biological, right? So that's one way to look at it. Biological, then mechanical would be the body, the mind, the environment. And one other category, which kind of overlaps with everything, is like energetics. Yeah. Those are the big five.
Love that. I love breaking that down. And it's right. I know, I would say from personal experience is when, and also how everything's layered in a way that, or webbed or layered, because what I found is that when I broke down physically and I'm just really strong, resilient, strong, I have a strong body, I have a strong mind, always have. And, but when my body biologically broke down, then what came up? Trauma, all that unhealed trauma, all of that stuff I avoided and was able to really push down and keep from ever having to look at or even be aware of. And so then that was this dark place of breaking down physically, biologically, where my body was shutting down while at the same time dealing with all this dark trauma and anxiety and depression and, you know, all this stuff that came up that I didn't even know was under there. And then it's a double, double whammy at one time. But, and where would you even fit like the spiritual piece? Because I know through my own experience, like I had chronic illness. I had to heal that. Now I have all this trauma and the psychological stuff that I'd never addressed and just pushed down, and trauma that, that was seriously there waiting for the opportunity to come up and come out. And then it was also, I know it's like the spiritual journey of really having to connect to I'm more than me. And I, the only real healing here, it's like, it's a spiritual journey. And that's what it really became, is a real spiritual journey, even though it was a physical journey and it was a psychological journey. All of that was connecting to universe and something far bigger than I, is like this real healing place. Yes. Do you fit that in as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that falls in, the way we look at it, it falls in under energetics, right? Because when you connect to spiritual and you have this awakening, what you're really doing is changing your vibrations, right? And at a quantum mechanics level, at the root of it, the energetics and any process that shifts our vibrations is the most powerful. It'd be amazing, technically, if we just worked in the energetic world, we actually don't need to do any of the other stuff. However, not everyone is open to that, right? And so sometimes people have no desire. And also, they're just in their life journey where there's, this is not their time, right? Not their time to kind of shift energetically. So we work in the mechanical, the biological, and all that stuff. For sure, the energetics, also known as the spiritual, is by far the most profound. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where I started, actually. So when I was 14, you know, aside from working out and, you know, looking better, already back then, like single parents, my parents divorced, and my earlier memories of my parents before they divorced was really just like them physically fighting and me being scared. And so at age 14, something clicked in me that said, go seek out knowledge of how to program your mind, right? And so like my first book actually was Psycho-Cybernetics, which is like how to program your subconscious, right? It wasn't like how to lift weights or bodybuild. And so for sure, that was the earliest work in shifting our, like my mindset and how we thought. And over the years from multiple different retreats and different experiences and meditation and all that stuff, yeah, definitely the most powerful aspect that people can practice, essentially, we'll just call it knowing thyself, right? Being clear on where their stories are coming from. And part of that part, if I were to say knowing thyself, if that is the path, we want to be mindful that the tool that we're using is language, right? And the language that we're internally using in our head and thinking dictates like what we're building. And I'm a huge fan, because right now what's really popular is that word trauma. So just imagine, let's say, right, one could say, hey, my memory of my dad, like physically choking my mom, was traumatic. Well, the end goal of that is to reframe that and have that be seen as a gift, right, as a lesson, as a value. If we assign it and call it trauma already, we're already starting in, quote unquote, the negative, and we have to go to the positive. So I'm a huge fan of not even using the T word. And I just go with, it was a heightened emotional experience, which it was, right? You're not going to lie to your own consciousness. For sure, when I witnessed that, it was a heightened emotional experience. But calling it a heightened emotional experience, at least it's neutral. I haven't assigned it a meaning yet in a way. And so from there, I can take it and go, oh, actually, that was a blessing, because I get to see and from there, my innate, especially tendency to help women feel better probably came from the fact that, yeah, I saw my mom being threatened, right? And my ability to understand how people feel, again, came from sort of understanding and feeling heightened emotions back then when I was young. And so just reframing that heightened emotional experience into something that was helpful and serving of my life is how I'm able to process that. And I don't have a trigger or a charge, or basically the other way to say it is my energy about that memory shifted, right? And so just a huge fan of like being very aware of our language, the tools that we're using. Most people know the path. Like, I'm on a spiritual path. I'm on an enlightened path. I'm on a self-clarity path. The tool is the language. Yeah, just being very acute to the language.
And I teach that a lot, just, you know, in my category with money, it's the first place we look is, I'm listening for the language that people are saying about money, like I can't afford it, or I'm not good with math, or I'm not good with money, or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, big, obvious. Yeah, I like how you say the tool is language. I wrote that down actually. Mm-hmm. What I found too is that giving meaning to things, I mean, I thought it was fine in the sense that I mm-hmm. never was triggered. I wasn't in any stories. I just buried things. And before I got sick, I'd have thought, those things didn't affect me whatsoever. I wouldn't even have believed trauma was a thing. I'd been like, whatever, that's bullshit. Yeah. And, you know, it's all because we assign meaning and we don't get over it and reliving the same stories over and over, you know? So I almost didn't have empathy there because I was just mind over matter and I didn't have any effects of all that. But when it decided to rear its ugly head, that was part of what I just call that really dark period of being stuck in it. And, and even though I, you know, positive thinking and all the tools that I'd used before in ways that I thought it was fine until I was in it.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, just part of the journey of working, like cleansing myself of those, not necessarily stories, but the memories that I think my body was holding that my mind wasn't even holding that had to be worked out. So part of that healing journey was actually talking through them, was doing certain types of work that allowed them to, not necessarily because my story before would have been like, oh yeah, all that stuff. I'm a better person because of it. But I was almost fooling myself in a way. I must have been, because when it decided to rear its ugly head, I was bullshitting myself in a way. I just didn't know it. So I think, part of that healing journey is whatever needs to be healed. There's all these, like you said, tools for healing different, like these different biological, I can't read my own writing, biological, mechanical, energetic, and whatever mind, your mind, right?
Yeah.
Mind environment.
Yeah. What's interesting is, when we work in the other realities, and you hear about this a lot, like people who get massages, especially myofascial release, which is a mechanical realm, they will release, you know, they'll have emotional releases just from the mechanical work, right? Because all of this is all overlapped. It's not like there are five separate categories. They're just five different ways of looking at the human and the system. Anything that you do to the system must affect the entire system. Right. And so that's the beauty of this, is that we can actually get to the emotional release through biological, through mechanical. Right. And so, yeah, for sure. To circle back to your original question, like in that sort of sick crowd or target audience, like what would be the recommendation? Well, I think for most people, the more illness that you have, the sicker that you have, what it really means, if you think about it, it means the more dis-eases that you have. And if you look at the word dis-ease, it's right, lack of ease. It's dis-ease. And so what that means is it just means that that category of people are spending more moments in their lives and days not in ease. Right? It's literally this simple. Right? If you're in ease, you're in a state of healing and adaptation. If you're in a state of dis-ease, you're in a state of manifesting diseases. And so then for that people, I would just check in and be like, well, what's the number one thing? Like I would just have them ask himself, what's the one thing I can do to bring more moments of ease throughout my day? Right. And this is a blanket recommendation, because you know it'd be different if I had a one-on-one consultation with that person. We could ask a little bit more specific questions and dialogue. But without that, I'm a huge fan of, like, there's this higher consciousness, inner knowing wisdom, and we can tap into it just asking the most appropriate questions. And I believe that people, if they fully feel, right, like tune into their feelings and they ask that question, for sure the answer will come. Right. And for that person, it might be, I mean, the most obvious answer, some people might say, well, I'm going to start exercising, I'm going to start meditating, but that may not be the case. Right. And so the answer actually could be much deeper. I just worked with someone yesterday. This is through dialogue, a little bit of coaching. What was the one thing that brought that person the most ease was imagining that his grandfather physically, you know, beat up his dad. Right. And we'll skip how we got to that. But that was the one thing that unlocked everything downstream. And so there are these very powerful I'm a huge fan of the book, The One Thing. So apply that to sort of this framework. And I believe that when people ask that question, and what we can do is you can just ask that question to yourself and journal with your dominant hand, and then also put the pen or paper or pencil in your non-dominant hand and journal. And what's interesting is something very fascinating and significant will typically come up from that. Yeah.
I've had some wild things by writing in my left hand, and it's like something's talking to me, and it's almost like something's taken over my left hand. I'm reading like, oh my gosh, it's really great work. I have not done that in a long time. I'm going to do that again, because I mean, who knew that just writing with the non-dominant hand would expose something I was completely unaware of.
Yeah. Because right, our left brain controls through our dominant hand, and that's the logical, non-emotional, rationalizing, which tends to suppress the emotion stuff, right? This is where you're like, no, I process all that stuff logically. But when you put in a non-dominant hand, it's the emotional side coming out, right? And that's typically the more raw, like, and for most people, like the true self almost in a way, right? It's like the side that we typically don't fully express and show. And so you just get some very interesting answers with that process.
Right? Yeah, I've experienced that. What about, so I earlier, well, early in 2019, I went through a pretty rough patch, just a life experience I wasn't expecting, and it took me to my knees. Mm-hmm. And all five of these were absolutely present. What I also found in my healing journey of that was the real healing for me was love. And it was getting to the place of the journey of really loving myself and going through that work. I already thought I was there, but going through what I went through, I'm like, ah, there's more work to do here. So it was that work, but it was also the love from the people and the relationships that really carried me during a very difficult time when I missed powerhouse Christina. Just couldn't get herself up, which is very uncommon. Yeah. Like when Christina goes down, that's a very rare occurrence. So yeah. It just caused me that even though I had a real healing journey, you know, 2013 was my year, that year of everything breaking and the healing journey and really believing in all these five categories. The difference this time was this just complete, injection of love energy from friends and family that just came in and just offered love and support. And I knew I wasn't alone in a way. I knew that I was going to get through it. I knew that during some of the roughest days, I was going to be okay. And I just found that was like this big new awakening for me of the power of love in the healing process. Like love is medicine, that gave me this new depth of love and loving others and this different category of empathy and understanding, less judgment of things. And, you know, just like give me this whole different depth because I was so grateful coming out of that experience of what I received. And there was no ask in return. It's just like, we've got you, you know, just break apart. You are safe.
Yeah.
And where does like the safety piece and the love piece fit into your work?
Sure. You know, so we talked about the path would be self-clarity, the tool or words, the fuel ideally is love. Right. So most people will use at some point in their lives, they tend to use willpower, dedication, hard work, and maybe even sacrifice as the fuel. But eventually they'll realize love is the most powerful fuel for sure in this path, right? Because you could use a lot of work, right? Some people can do a lot of self-clarity in work, whether it be their mechanical cells, like they're going to work out, they do it with dedication and determination. It could be mental work, like they set their schedule and they get into meditation. It could be even be spiritual work where they're like, all right, I'm going to go to this retreat and that retreat, I'm going to fit that in my schedule. All of it could be fueled for sure with dedication, willpower, and sacrifice. But we can fuel it with love. That's for sure. You can fuel brushing your teeth with love, right? You can fuel all this, everything we've talked about with love, by far, absolutely, the vibrational energy of love is the most powerful, right? And so, you know, Steve's, you know, a little insight to Steve's brain, how I decide anything in life is, first question, is this bringing me closer to the state of love or not? And I only do things that's a yes. If it's business, my second question follow-up is, does this get me to helping a billion people? Right. And I don't, but the two simple questions, because I kind of figured out a while ago on your deathbed, you're probably not going to have this thought, which is, damn it, I should have not done that out of love. Right. And so just simplifying life. Yes, for sure. Love is by far the most powerful fuel.
Yeah. No, when I was through my own healing journey years back, is that so much of what was coming up when I thought I was dying was so much regret. And this awareness of like my whole life was about achievement and accomplishment and success and more money in the bank and status. And I did great in business. I did great with the zeros, but there I am on my deathbed realizing I was just going to the next there, the next there, and the next there. And I was never, ever arriving at a place where I was happy or good enough because there was always the next place to go. And so, I mean, I speaking from personal experience, it's that we say that, but I was right there like, oh my gosh, like just so much regret and remorse for not living and just chasing the wrong things versus just experiencing and feeling and loving and connecting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing journey that you're on. And what's interesting is I find that there are these sort of general seven overall hermetic, you know, rules that govern the universe. And one of them being, I just call it a pendulum, right? So there's this pattern in reality. And so I believe, and I've seen this from working with humans for the last 30 years, is that whenever you pull the pendulum too far one way, let's say if it's like too much work and, you know, not paying attention to the body and all that stuff, the cool part about that is when you let go of that pendulum, it just swings farther the other way, right? You get to realize, oh my God, there's like so much love and acceptance. And so I kind of remind people that when they experience an aspect of their lives or a period of their lives with like, so quote unquote, in balance, well, luckily when you let go of that pendulum, which absolutely at some point it swings the other way, you actually just get to experience that much more like love and joy and self-acceptance and all that stuff. Yeah. And everything is just pendulum swinging. And what's fascinating is I believe that the universe, God, whatever people believe in, actually just wants us in this human egoic 3D experience to experience these dualities, right? These sort of pendulum swings. And for example, and you can apply your imagination to experience this, right? If you're, for example, if you internalize yourself as very strong and resilient, you can actually imagine what life would be like being very weak. And in fact, you can then avoid the sometimes, you know, swing the other way, right? Because if you just imagine the opposite of you, basically, because the other way said is, you know, you'll hear about this in recent self-help world, like there's the shadow side, right? So there's this other side of us. Everything, if there's light, there's got to be a darkness. And if you fully step into the darkness, which just means if you fully imagine yourself as the opposite of you, that is exactly the path and a process that God and the universe wants us to learn. And what's interesting is, I kind of wrote about this the other day, is when you imagine the opposite, imagine two light sources shining up, one on one and one on the other, where the light intersects creates a hologram. The lesson's in the hologram. In other words, when you imagine the opposite quality of within you, there's a third lesson that has nothing to do with the two opposites, right? Like, I don't know, being mean and being kind, right? The real lesson has nothing to do with being mean and being kind. It's only fully expressing being mean and being kind, you'll learn this other lesson. To me, this is one of the games that we're in.
I love that. So let's break down the five a little bit more. So
yeah.
Did I hear you say that when it comes just the biological, that pretty much everything's reducing down to some, like when it comes to illness, with some type of systemic inflammation? And if so, what does that mean really?
Yeah. So essentially, when your cells are consistently inflamed, the cell cannot function normally, right? It literally, your cell has all kinds of, you know, it's DNA, mitochondria, all these little things inside the cell that is constantly working to keep things normal, right? In physiological, biological world, the fancy science term is homeostasis. That's like saying ease, right? Homeostasis would be like saying ease. And essentially, systemic inflammation blocks your body's ability to get into homeostasis. And so from a global term, it's like saying inflammation blocks your body and your cellular process, its inability to go into a state of ease, right? And so if that's the case, then again, we just look at, well, what's making your body inflamed? And so underneath that category, it's going to be like your gut health, the toxins that you're exposed to. Everyone is toxic. 93% of Americans have Roundup in their bodies. That's like saying 93% of Americans have gut dysfunction, right? And so, and again, overlaps, like obviously the way in which you assign meaning, if it's constantly at a fight or flight stress response, your body will release chemicals that put you in stress. It will divert blood away from your stomach, so you have a poor absorption of nutrients state. And so, yeah, so from a biological standpoint, being aware of like what, and also the nutrients, like the vitamins A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, the minerals and all that stuff. Ideally, those are tested to see what's deficient, right? And we know most people, whenever we test entrepreneurs, have deficiencies, just because there's studies showing that it takes 7 oranges today to equal the nutrients of 1 orange 40 years ago, right? Just our food isn't as nutritious as it once were, even if it's organic. It just isn't quite as nutritious. So we haven't yet tested any human that we worked with that didn't have a deficiency, that didn't have high levels of toxicity. Those are known for sure. Yeah.
Great. And then what about mechanical? Do you recommend seeing chiropractors on a regular basis? Or what is the method for the posture and for making sure that the structure, our infrastructure is aligned properly? That, I mean, I didn't even consider if I'm hunching over that might be a factor in my overall health when I might be doing well in the other categories.
Yeah. So again, it overlaps. So even though the question is about mechanical, I'll talk about environment, right? So if you work on a computer, imagine if the computer monitor was on the ceiling and you cut the keyboard in half and one is all the way to the right of your arm, one always to the left. You basically have to work like in a super upright posture in order to work in this environment. While it's exaggerated, what you can see by imagining that is the environment controls our posture. Right. And so I don't believe humans have poor posture. I believe humans have a completely outdated work environment. Right. Like the desk and chair has been the same desk and chair for over 5,000 years. It hasn't been really updated. And so we want to be mindful of how we are designing our workstation, our work environment. Right. Making sure the monitor is high enough so you don't have to look down to the monitor, making sure that your keyboard is at the right height, making sure you have elbow rests. And, you know, ideally not sit. You want to stand, even though a standing desk isn't more healthy than sitting. It just has its own other evils. And so we're actually developing a product to solve that problem. And if you're doing all of that and you have that in place, then and only then consider some type of movement program, right? Because to me, that's like the root cause. The environment's dictating how you're positioned. The stretches and seeing the chiropractor are still treating symptoms. So let's make sure we get the root cause stuff in place, and then and only then you can add the symptom stuff, right? And so that would be, I mean, yoga would be amazing. I'm a huge fan of like empowering the human to, in a way, heal themselves so they don't have to rely on an external source, right? Because ultimately, we want to empower humans to learn themselves for lots of things. And so yoga, for sure, would be my number one recommendation. But some people's disposition may not match yoga. So some kind of regular movement program. And what I would suggest is, again, this is tools and language. Most people will say, what workout should I do? I recommend asking a different question, which is, how can I move my body that brings me and connects me with more ease and benefits my physical body, right? That could be dancing. Right. I actually had someone that loves to paint. I was like, why don't you paint murals? You get these big movements, you move your body, and you love painting. Right. But no one would, when you call it a workout, no one would consider painting murals a workout. Right. And so just by changing the words that we use, our consciousness can cast a wider net of ideas to consider, basically. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so what are you noticing with environments? I mean, you mentioned like more of a physical environment, but just talk environments. Yeah. Where are you seeing that Sure. Our environments are causing the more dis-ease that could likely turn to disease?
This is huge. Yep. So anyone listening, you can just type in EWG water, Google that. And basically, Environmental Working Group has done a lot of great work. And one of the things that they've done is they've sampled water, municipal water supply, all over the country. And if you type in your zip code and you can find like your water supply, like where I'm at, it's New Jersey American Water. And so you can see how there's 8 chemicals in my water that are there that are known horrible for humans, but they're below safety levels, which is good. But there's 8 that exceed safety levels, right? So our water supply is completely contaminated. And every person we've ever done this for, the lowest I've seen is 2, up to 13 was the highest. So in other words, everyone we've ever done this for has between 2 to 13 chemicals that exceed safe levels known to cause illness and disease in a human body, right? So I recommend that everyone get a central line filter if you own your home, right? Filter the water, every drop of water that comes in, because it doesn't make sense to filter only your drinking water, but bathe and shower in toxic water because it's still getting into your body. So that's the water. The other thing is, and you can buy a simple tester on Amazon for about $150 that will test the dust particle density of your air, right? There's studies showing that the dust particle density of air is a better predictor of heart disease than cholesterol. Right, because when we're breathing in all these tiny bits of dust, which is causing all this inflammation, the inflammation makes it sticky and thus the heart disease, right? And so simple tester, you know, test your home, test your office. And if there are a lot of dust particles, you want to make sure you get a good air filtration system to kind of have that running all the time. For sure, for most people who live in cities with smog and stuff, you definitely I can tell you it's going to be high. You might as well just go and get an air filter right away, because we've seen that data. And there's even fascinating research on cities with a higher smog and higher dust particles have the highest incidence of depression and suicide compared to other cities. And because we can trace this back, there's studies showing that when your body's inflamed, also your brain, your system's inflamed, the inflammation leads to depression, anxiety, and all those things. Right. So air and water are huge. They're the two biggest variables to consider in terms of actual natural environment.
And then there's the chemicals on our food, chemicals in detergents, chemicals in soaps, chemicals. So we're really just swimming in chemicals, most of us.
Yeah. The most recent study from 2 years ago, when they tested sample random Americans, the lowest number of industrial toxins in a person's blood, that lucky person, was 300. The highest was 700. So that's the range, right? The average American has between 300 to 700 industrial chemicals. And most people may not realize, since 1976, 82,000 new chemicals have been made and poured onto and into us in our products and our food. Less than 300 have any safety testing. Right? It's like saying 81,700 new drugs have been given to us with zero data on, wait, is this safe for humans or not? It is a massive, massive, massive issue that really most people are not paying attention to. So yes, there's definitely being aware of non-toxic everything. Right. And so we actually, there's a database by EWG where you can plug in your soap, your shampoo, your conditioner, and it'll basically tell you how toxic it is. The drawback is it's a problem identifier and not a solution giver. Right. It doesn't tell you, well, this is toxic, buy this instead. So a couple of years ago, I paid a team of virtual assistants to recreate the entire database. And the algorithm I told them was find the top three safest products in every category that's also on Amazon Prime. And make that database. Now it's a solution giver. Yeah, so it's just tossouttoxicity.com. If people go there, you can kind of see all the safest shampoo, deodorant, lotion, hairspray, whatever you want to use.
Wow. So if we're looking at cleaning up our environment, we want to make sure we have clean water at the source of the water, not just my five filtration system that's my drinking water. So that's a good one. To test our air and probably invest in an air filtration system that probably ranges in cost, and then clean food, and then buy clean products.
Yeah. Now, once you have all those in place, there's a lot, right? And so, because it's everywhere, cookware, make sure you don't have any nonstick pans. They're completely toxic. Bedding, a lot of bedding off gases. Like if you ever buy a new mattress, it kind of smells. Yeah, that's those chemicals are off gassing, meaning they're evaporating into the air. So you want to make sure you're buying like a non-chemical mattress, and there's companies out there. Ideally, whenever you buy new clothes, they've all been sprayed with a flame retardant, bromine, and bromine is very thyroid toxic, which is why we're starting to see a dramatic rise, right? Thyroid cancer has increased by 172% in the last 10 years. Tremendous. And so ideally, you want to wash your clothes a few times before you wear it if you buy new clothes.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Yeah.
And what about relationships?
Like human relationships?
Yes.
Yeah.
As far as environments.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, we could probably do a whole hour on that. Trying to keep it simple as far as relationships. It's definitely huge, right? So most people who are into any kind of self-development stuff know things like everything's a mirror, right? Whatever you like or don't like about the other person's a mirror within you. I would say my tip on relationships is instead of judging what's happening, just whatever is bringing an awareness to you, whatever is getting awareness, whether you like it or don't like it about that person, just seek out why that person is doing that. Why, how did they become that type of human that is doing that? Because ultimately that way of thinking will teach everything about yourself. That would be my tip on relationships.
I love that. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about what's the mental piece, like the mindset mental piece. Is this like psychological mental, mindset mental?
Yeah. Again, even within that, we'd probably do a whole day on that. So the super simple process is, if you think about it, if we can see all previous experiences in our lives and experience and integrate all previous experiences in our lives and every experience coming forward that was an obstacle, right? An obstacle would be something we want A, but B happened, right? If we can see all obstacles as an opportunity, we essentially would die in peace. We would live in peace, right? So if I had to sum up in general, the framework of mindset is the practice of seeing any unwanted outcomes as a value to the self, right? That single practice is the most powerful process. And there's many ways to practice this, but that's the intention of seeing all unwanted outcomes and learning from the unwanted. Like I wanted A to happen, but B happened. But either way, B, when that happened, I actually got this much value out of it, because over time you actually don't care about B. You don't worry about the future. Because if you get A, great, you got what you wanted. If you got B or C or D or E, if you're like, great, because I'm going to find some type of value and you'll live in peace. Like I tell a great story about this with my daughter when she's 11. When she was 9, she fell and cut her mouth. So we had to get like 30 stitches on her face. And when she came home, she's like, today was the best day of my life. She's like, I got to feel what stitches feel like. I got to meet mommy's friends at the hospital. It's because I brainwashed her in her whole life to see obstacles as opportunities, right? And so with that in place, you really never had to worry. Or if any human that has it in place, if you have kids or family members that have that in place, you never had to worry about them because they'll just see a value in no matter what happens to them. So,
and so when you say stress is a symptom, what are you noticing that, you know, just say it's like an epidemic, you know, just environments. I mean, just seems like most people are just so stressed out and just they live this life in some perpetual crisis or stress or something where things aren't working and they're like stuck.
Yep. So a lot of times that pattern, right? First, I'll start off with, I'm a huge fan of this process. It's written by two students of Richard Bandler who created NLP. All right, so the process, and there's a book on it called Core Transformations. The reason I love their process is they see all patterns that we don't want as valuable, right? Because the general self-help world says, oh, that's bad. Let's fix it, right? Their whole premise is there's nothing broken about you or us or anyone. That pattern currently actually is giving us value. And so first I'll start with that because there's so much, I feel like 99% of self-help stuff out there is saying basically your mind is broken and let's fix it. Just like 99% of fitness professionals would say your body's broken, let's fix it, right? I'm not a big fan of that framework because it already imparts that there's something quote unquote wrong with you. And so, which is why I don't even like to even say the word stress because we can bypass that entire reality. Because if we just practice against seeing obstacles as opportunities, there would be no stress anyway, right? It's almost like instead of looking at the fact that a person is sunburned and what best lotion to put on a sunburn, how do we treat a sunburn, let's just not have them go in the sun excessively, right? Then we never have to worry about the sunburn, right? And think about the sunburn. And so, but in general, when it comes to stress, I would say start with there's a reason why your subconscious is choosing to be in that state. As weird as that sounds, that's absolutely true. And so in my mind, instead of sort of fixing it, if you're actually going to address it, there's a whole process. I recommend people looking up Core Transformations. And the super short version is you ask yourself, what is the benefit? And actually the answer will come. And you keep asking yourself, what's the deepest benefit of it? And at some point, it usually will boil down to like feeling love, feeling significant, feeling connected, feeling safe, something, right? And then they have a whole process using, in NLP terms, it's a timeline regression where you imprint the very thing that it's trying to give you into your life, and that pattern just essentially goes away, right? And again, this is just one tool or one path of doing this if you want to work at the symptomatic level in a way. But to me, ultimately, there's a way to bypass that. And a lot of that is reimagining our past, right? Many of us are, and I believe, and I did a whole talk in imagination, completely downplays like what our mind is actually doing. I actually do believe our consciousness can affect reality, right? And so I'll just use mass media words. If we reimagine our past, that can immediately shift our state and our vibration in the now. And that basically ends that stress process and that that vibration.
All right, let's move into energy. So when you're talking about vibration and energy and spirituality, share a little bit about that. Like, where would you say on average when people are coming to see you or are starting to follow you in your work, where they might be vibrationally, energetically, and then what's possible?
Yep. Yeah, that's a very interesting topic. So these days, like literally, especially in the last 6 months, I put the intention to essentially only work with people who have already had some practice, right? Some awareness, right? And again, if we use mass media, whereas they've already had some type of awakening, right? Because I feel like there's a lot of people out there who can help people achieve that first awakening. We want to take people that have woken up a little bit, and then we leverage that wanting of more of that to really transform their lives, right? So I'll start with that. And then at that point, once they're in sort of our world, it depends on where they're at in their understanding, right? And so, because this is a very deep rabbit hole when it comes to spirituality awakening, right? Like, to give you an idea, in my reality, we absolutely can control our past, present, and of course, you know, in future, we can control previous lives. And if you don't believe in, because previous life is still using time, right? Because it's a previous life. But technically, another way to describe a previous life would be multi-dimensional, like variations of the now, right? And so absolutely in our conscious, I believe from experience, we can change other variations of our lives in a different dimension. Now, when I say a different dimension, if a listener's like, that's BS, keep in mind that CERN, the super high energy particle smasher over in Europe, has scientifically opened portals to other dimensions. This is not even woo-woo spiritual stuff. This is science at this point. Like, we know there's other dimensions, right? And so I believe our consciousness, our thoughts can actually change essentially other dimensions, other realities that we are coexisting in. There's, you know, infinite variations of Steve and Christina out there. And even then, on top of that, we are literally projecting. And again, this is science. We're actually constantly changing the molecules of our reality. And if that seems weird, just like go on YouTube and search like double slit experiment. This is proven. When we look at molecules, we change the behavior of the molecules. And so, you know, I use a lot of science to explain the spiritual stuff. And then we're immersing people in these experiences that we have so they feel it versus knowing, right? Because knowing is the lowest level of learning. Experiencing it and integrating it is a much higher level and feeling, right? We want people to experience, feel, and integrate, because knowing is still only at the mind and intellectual part.
And what do you see is like the, to use just layman mm-hmm. terms in a way, like you said, mass media terms, mm-hmm. what's the biggest block between where we're limiting ourselves, like mentally, energetically, mm-hmm. and what's possible? Like, pretending there's something there in the way. There's not, but what would you identify as that block, the biggest obstacle, right?
Great question. Mass media, by far. If you think about it, let's take love, for example, right? Where do people get their concept of love? When they were young, were they reading Rumi, who's sort of the foremost philosophical expert? Were they talking deeply with their parents, like when they were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, about love, when love conceptually started to form? No, it's from books, TV, all that stuff. If you actually sit down and think about our expectations of everything, of the car that we drive, what is marriage, right? What is love? What is an actual relationship? The timing, the sequence, the pattern, it's all mass media. But I want you all, it's majority mass media, right? And so once you realize that, whenever you're doing anything, you just question, you're like, you observe your actions and your thoughts and say, how much of this is like a story or a movie that I've seen? I've literally have had conversations with loved ones, with friends, where the words are coming out of my mouth. I was like, that's literally from a movie, right? And so, and then we start to talk about, is that really your words or from a movie? So just observing our thoughts and actions and question, like, how much of this is from a movie? You might realize that, oh my God, much of our lives. It's from books and movies and fiction. And you keep in mind that movies, books, and stuff were written by authors who had to make things dramatic, right? Because no movie or book, no one will ever watch a movie that says, you know, Jane wanted A and Jane got A. Jane wanted B and Jane got B. Jane wanted C. Like, no, there has to be drama. It's why our mass media lives typically live in drama, because we're following a fiction life that some author made up to be entertaining. So mass media, for sure.
Great answer. I love that. Now, do you fit anything? I'm going to be going to Rhythmia at the end of March. Anybody that wants to tag along?
Yeah.
But what do you fit any plant medicine or anything like these modalities as a way to tap in or experience other dimensions or to break out of the mass media as a limiting or just story?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I believe plant medicines is for sure a fast roller coaster way to journey through this, you know, pun intended, right? Of course, there's ways to do it without plant medicines, right? And so, and to each his own, right? So I will say that it is very powerful, and anything that's a powerful thing must come with it. It's the pendulum, right? You're going to swing this awakening big and you're going to let go. What I'm seeing in a lot of my friends who are doing this is there's not much integration, right? The programs, the places people are going to consume these substances, it's not like there's like a 3-month, you know, follow-up coaching program to help you integrate. It's like you did it. It's one day of integration and you're like, you're done. You're off to a normal world. And a lot of people have actually a hard time. I was at Rhythmia 2 months ago, month and a half. And I organized a weekly integration call with the friends that we were with, because I knew some of them, and we were on these calls, like, I'm having a really hard time. I'm freaking out here, right? And so I set up those calls to kind of help them integrate, because definitely that. And then prior to it, and I was just talking to Shaman about this, there ideally is a very extensive preparatory process from a diet perspective, and you can go, that's the easy part. You can Google that, like non-spicy foods and no meats and all that stuff. And then there's an energy prep that isn't really talked about. It's almost like you want to make sure you get your energy centers and chakras as aligned as possible, and to make sure you're not going into a plant medicine with any entities and energies that, and we'll just call it vibrations, that don't belong within you. Because if you go in there with it, it actually will magnify that, right? Because it is an accelerant. So I would say anyone that's listening that's interested in that stuff, make sure you have a great preparatory process and a post, we'll call it, integration process in place. And if those things are in place, it is a fabulous tool for people.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for that explanation, because it's a trendy thing and I see the same thing. It's go for the experience, think that's going to maybe open things up, but it has to be integrated, and that's additional work. It's not just a 3 to 5 day process. So, yes. I mean, I'm so intrigued by you and your work. I want to come work with you. I'm going to come work with you this year, because I just love, I mean, everything you've said, I'm like, yes. So would you share a little bit about, you know, if those that come to your retreats, like what they are, what you're doing, and what the results are coming out of these, you know, this work with you?
Yeah. Those experiences are some of the most rewarding days in my life. And so, just because unlike a retreat where you go and learn stuff, we actually keep the learning to a minimum. It's like maybe at most 20% learning. 80% of it is designed to feel and experience, right? And so we combine sacredness with science. And so the science part, which is the easy part, we'll talk about, we have, you know, NLP experts and mindset experts and mechanical experts. We have hundreds of thousands of dollars of machines there to accelerate rejuvenation and healing of the mind and body. That's all the science part. Yeah, it's cool. But the sacredness is some of the group activities that we do to fully embody some of the key concepts that govern the universe, right? Because I feel like there are these, you know, the duality is one of them, the pendulum swings another, mentalism, everything in our mind is projecting, that's another one. So there's these key elements we want people to fully not just know, because if you read about it, it's like, oh, that's cool. When you fully live in it, you go, oh my God, I can control my reality. Right. And so that's the fun part. And the result of that, like in the last one, when we were in Utah, most of the people said it was the most life transformational experience of their lives. We had someone that said, after 3 days, it was the first time she was able to look in the mirror and not criticize herself. Like, and that's just one of the comments, and there's been multiple comments. And so those are some of the most profound results that it's why I love doing those. It's just like playtime for me, right? I get to, put on my, I'm usually have my science hat on all the time. It's the one time I can put on my magic side, my magic hat on, and do a little bit of magic with everyone. And so we, without disclosing the fun parts, but we do some pretty awesome ceremonies and experiences and activities that really help people fully feel some of the concepts I've spoken about.
I love that. All right. Well, I'll be working with you this year. Yay. And just a few final questions here is, yeah, I like to like really tap into the personal Steve, not just the professional, yeah, Steve. Yeah. So if you were to say the words, if you really, really knew me, you would know that.
Yeah. If you really knew me, you would know that. I mean, my key word is compassion. You would also know that I'm just an inner geek. I mean, I used to play video games for like 16 hours a day. And in fact, I entered in video game competitions. It's very interesting. And if you really knew me, you would know that I deeply, deeply care about you. Yeah, it's one of my, it's why I'm in the helping humans profession. I there's something magical about bonding with a human. Like my wife tells me, like, I don't do small talk. There's something deeply rewarding about just really getting to know someone at an emotional level and bonding at that level.
I feel that from you and just connect, yeah, soul to soul. So yeah, totally agree. And you're a foodie, right?
Yep, definitely foodie. I mean, I have a book eating at the top 50 restaurants in the world. And so, awesome.
Yeah, all right. So what, give me a big brag. What's something you're most proud of?
My kids. Yeah. I have pretty magical girls. I mean, even just when I heard my daughter say that 2 years ago, I was like, wow, that's all the many decades of studying and stuff, like, is worth it, right? I mean, just literally for her to say, you know, that was the best day of my life after getting like 30 stitches on her face, I was like, that's pretty magical. Yeah. And then, you know, and just imparting this mindset, like, right, you know, my daughter just painted a painting and I helped her put it online on eBay. And then she's getting like, someone offered her like 8% royalty to put her art on the candles that they'll sell. So it's just kind of cool to see them taking a we'll call it non-mass media path in every which way. So that's been really rewarding.
Nice. All right. So one final question. Just a great big myth for us. What's a big fat lie that you see in your world that you'd like to call out?
Sure. Yeah. I think the general big fat lie is there's this one diet that works for everyone. And that diet, you can put in fasting, you can put in keto, any diet you can think of. There's no such thing at this point, given our science, of one way of doing anything that fits all in a way, if you think about it, right? And so, because, you know, like, give an example, like, we had someone that did keto to get healthy. And then when we tested his genetics and he wasn't feeling good on keto, it was confirmed that his liver genetically can only process about 28 grams of saturated fat a day. And he was eating, obviously, on keto way more than that. That's a great example of that diet and that eating plan was actually harmful. And everyone believes fasting is universally healthy for you. I do not believe that's the case, because I'm a huge fan of always thinking the meta, right? It's not the diet. In the fasting samples, you're practicing extremes. You're practicing all food, no food. And most people that I know, especially my entrepreneur friends, are already very well practiced at extremes. They could probably practice a little bit more flow and intuitive. And so to them, I would prefer them like smell the food, chew it slowly, tune into how it feels way more than fasting. And so just being aware of the meta of like the how, not just the what.
I love it. Well, Steve, thank you so much. And a big shout out to Melinda of Wings for connecting us. And it's just such an honor to know you. And thank you for sharing so much genius with us. I know we just covered like 0.1% of the surface of so much that you have to share. So thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.